Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. Pricing your online work, digital products, is not easy. How much should I charge for this website, for that website? Sounds simple, but very difficult. How you can value price your online work for right profit? Lee Jackson shares all the good tips. This is episode number 14 of the podcast. Let's hear in. And if you've been enjoying this podcast, don't forget to leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Just go to smartwebcreators.com/iTunes to get directly to the iTunes page. Now let's hear in Lee Jackson talking about prices, pricing, value work, making profit. Hey Lee, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. How are you today?
I'm doing good. You are the rock star of our world, the web design and development world. I'm sure Majority of people know you, but for that one person out of 100 who does not know you, why don't you give a quick introduction about your online life?
Sure thing. So my name is Lee Jackson. I run a few online businesses. One of them is Angled Crown. So that's WordPress development for design agencies, taking their designs and building WordPress themes. We also run the Agency Trailblazer podcast. So that's for agency owners that want to grow their agencies or just fall in love with their agency again, because you'll know agency life is very stressful. We also run Event Engine, which is a WordPress powered event content management systems in the event space as well. And I'm also consulting for other people around the world. So pretty busy guy, but have loads and loads of fun and been focused for the last 3 years on growing a personal brand.
Yeah, it's good to be busy since you are running a lot of online, you know, verticals. I'm sure one thing that's common in all of them is pricing and discovering the value, not just your value as a person, you're not doing the work, but also the value of the project that you're doing and the value it delivers to the client. So we are going to talk about pricing, value, all these very common yet complicated things, because these gets asked so often, and there's no yes or no answer for this. So let's start with someone who is new to the web world. Now, when you're new to the online world, focus primarily is on, you know, getting the work you can do rather than pricing. Now, during that phase, everyone wants to win those small battles of, you know, learning and gathering experience doing those small bits of projects that one can get hands on. Is it right to assume that pricing for beginners is not that critical subject?
I think it's absolutely essential. If you start off without working out things like your pricing, the value that you have to offer, then you're starting off with essentially with a handicap, because if we go right back in time, I charged £150 for my first WordPress theme, and that was way too little. Nowadays, I'll charge minimum of £3,000 plus. So if you can imagine, I was doing a week's worth of work for £150. That did not allow me to grow very quickly. And it was a very bad place to start from. It's a long way to go from £150 to £3,000 for the exact same work. So I think actually understanding pricing when you're first getting started is essential. Yes, you can do a few loss leaders to build up your portfolio, but you do need to understand pricing. You need to understand how much it costs you to live. You need to understand that you can't work for every single hour that is available. So don't price yourself too low, and at least create some sort of logical pricing structure that will actually support a business. And me doing £150 websites was ridiculous. I would never have been able to survive.
Well, we all started the same way. Even I charge way too little now. If I revisit those, I still have those vintage clients with me, but obviously the pricing has gone up, but not to an extent that I would charge to a new client now, because, you know, vintage helps, you know, those are like, they know you as in and out, those type of clients. So for a new person, you know, getting a project or getting a work that he or she can do is itself a big task, and figuring out pricing is like is something an unknown, you know, territory for that person. So
yeah.
Which resource or which place would you recommend, or what methodology a new person should follow to, you know, identify a bit of, you know, pricing range that he or she can work on?
No problem. I mean, you can adopt the exact same practice that I still adopt to this day, which is having a conversation with the client and actually understanding what the problem is that they have and understanding what the cost of that problem is to them. So to use an example, perhaps they have a website of which they need to generate leads from, and they have a shortfall in leads. The average value of the lead may be £50,000 per lead, and they need to win at least 3 leads in that year at approximately £50,000 each. That gives them the business that they need to continue with. So you're not building them a website, you're actually building them something that will help them solve that problem, i.e. generate £150,000 worth of revenue. So we now know that this isn't just a 5-page website that's a few hours of your time. This is actually a solution that you're going to create that's going to help them to get that £150,000. That's a £150,000 problem. Obviously, you're not going to charge them £150,000, but you do need to make sure that you are putting in the work and the effort and charging the price that is representative of the solution, not just throwing them a 5-page theme out there, hoping that they might generate some leads through your work. You actually want to put the work, the time, and the effort in. So we always have those sorts of conversations. What are your problems? What are you looking to achieve? How are we going to measure the success of your website, etc.? Because these are the sorts of questions that you can lead with, which actually allows you to understand what budgets the client actually has to play with as well. If you don't have those conversations, you might be left, say, charging them for a few days of your time and not giving the client everything that you could have done because you didn't understand the problem deeper. So it's not just about getting their budget out of them, which is very helpful for you, for your pricing, etc., but it's also making sure that you've actually really teased out the real issue, as opposed to, hey, we need a new website. First question could be, why is the existing site not working?
Yeah. And don't tell client that I'm new. This is my first website.
There is no need to. If you look at my website, anglecrown.com, there is no portfolio, and there never has been for 5 years.
Same here. A lot of people say, you know, why you don't have portfolio? You know, I get like 100% of my work from referrals. No one mm-hmm. you know, Googles Same. My website. My website is like 3 pages at max. And even mm-hmm. people won't like those 3 pages because like it has thin content, all SEO blunders done on those 3 pages. But it's okay. Mm-hmm. Because
I did do a few loss leaders, as you know, £150 websites, etc. So that allowed me to get a couple, but I never needed to put them online. If I had a conversation and someone wasn't already convinced that I understood their business enough to solve their problem, I could still at least say, oh, and hey, look, I built these 2 websites. Didn't need to tell them how much I charged for anything, but at least they could see, oh, look, Lee built this. Great. He can do what he says he can do, and his website looked great. Let's get him involved.
So, you know, a lot of people pigeonhole themselves when they're starting off of not figuring out pricing. Like even I did it, and I'm sure even you did it, because we didn't have that many resources, awareness, even podcast at that time. Like it was like a barren land at that time. But if someone has, you know, is in that situation now and starting off like 3-2 months already in the process, there would not be, you know, he shouldn't decide on things that I'll start doing it from 6 months down the line, or he should start immediately work on your pricing.
You should be working on your pricing immediately, but also you should be working on who is your target audience. What is it that you're doing for the target audience as well? Because that's also going to dictate the pricing. And remember, because we are, most of us, solving problems as opposed to just selling a cookie cutter service, there is no specific pricing other than engaging in those conversations, understanding the size of the problem, and therefore ensuring that when you're pricing, you are totally covering your time, and also, you know, making sure that you can be a sustainable business. Having profit is your responsibility to yourself and to your client, because if you don't charge a profitable price, which allows you to put money in the bank and be a successful business, you're not going to be there in a year's time to support the client. So we have a responsibility to be profitable businesses. So if you're starting out, pricing now, profit, you know, focus on that profit as well, margin. It's fine to charge and get profit.
Okay, now let's talk about a few difficult things that I wish someone had told me when I started, but I learned it like a few years down the line. The first is learning to say no. Now, it took me a few years to realize that no is better than yes in certain situations. In fact, in most of the opportunities that bump into you.
Yep.
How has been your experience in saying no, and how can someone learn the art of saying no? Because it's not easy to, you know, leave those opportunities on table, because we always have tendency, oh, I will lose this project.
I used to say yes an awful lot, and to my detriment. Yep. I would say yes. I would take on terrible projects. I would say yes to people with low budget because I wanted to help. And that would always go wrong. And I was just a yes guy, and it was absolutely awful, and realized something had to change. The way I progress with everything now is every single lead or opportunity, I start with a no mentality. So somebody says, hey, I'm interested in building a brand new website. I don't say no to them straight away, but what I now need them to do is to convince me that it is worth my while engaging further down this journey with them to understand what their needs are and whether or not I'm going to be the person for them. So it's on them to start to convince me, you know, have they got a problem that's worth solving? Are they even going to have the budgets, etc., to put into this to actually solve the problem? You know, do they have that intent and all of that good stuff? So essentially, I'll start with a no mentality internally, and I'll ask questions to draw from them everything I need to start to convert that into either a definitely no, of which I'll then tell them, or is this going to be a yes, or is this worth exploring with some sort of paid discovery, etc., to help them along the journey? Because remember, a lot of times people don't know how to tell you what their problems are, or they don't know how to brief a website to you either. So that in itself is a valuable service that you could be offering either as a way in or as an actual paid service.
Yeah, and that's an interesting approach, like starting off with no. And I still remember, you know, when I used to say yes to everything, the brain drain that happens on those projects is like one project will eat up like 80% of your brain, and you will feel bad, pathetic about why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And well, remember as well, I mean, I said no a few weeks ago to someone because I saw they'd had a quote from someone else. That person therefore couldn't do the work, but they sent me everything, including the brief. And I said, well, based on what you've said and been quoted, there is no way we would do it at that price. Our price would be X, Y, Z. And the client replied and said, yeah, that's fine. We can find that budget. Which absolutely knocked me off my feet. I was thinking, oh, this is just a flat out no way. We're not doing that for that price. This is how much we would charge. And they accepted. So no can still work. And it's actually worked out to be a very good relationship.
Yeah. And people like us who are like, we fell down and we, you know, stood up because there were not many resources or people to, you know, tell us these things. But now you have a lot of resources. Not just people who are doing the work are getting smarter, but even clients are getting smarter. They will like, they will twist and turn your things and see where do you fall and then get into their loop, because there are those kind of clients as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So exactly. Other important thing is finding your sweet spot quickly. Now, doing specific things in your work profile and position yourself as an expert. How has been your journey in this regard, and what advice would you give to someone wanting to do the same? So basically,
all right.
I'm going to do that kind of work. That's about it.
No worries. Well, I've done this twice. Well, thrice. Three times, and I'm doing it all the time. So first of all, what do you absolutely freaking love doing? That's the most important thing. I know it sounds kooky and all very high level and woo-woo or whatever, but if you absolutely love doing something, then it's more likely you're going to be very good at it and do it incredibly well and efficiently and effectively. So if you are amazing at designing brands, maybe consider just do branding. And if you are really good at designing brands and found a sweet spot in, I don't know, accountancies and making them look amazing, then hey, why the hell not just do branding for accountancy organizations? And that becomes your sweet spot. That becomes your messaging. That becomes the content of your website. If you launch a podcast, that becomes the content of your podcast. If you create videos, that's the content of your videos, because you are going to elevate yourself in a much smaller pond than trying to be an all-service agency. Not only have you honed in on just do branding, but you've also honed in on a particular industry or type of client as well, which therefore reduces the competition that's around you. So we've done this, for example, with Angle Crown, where we only build WordPress themes and plugins for design agencies and nothing else. We do work with personal brands as long as they have designers with them as well. So they'll bring a designer with them to the party. So that's the only work we do for them. And that's clear on our messaging and on our website. In Event Engine, we will only work with event organizers that do conferences, minimum of 30 per year, and they've got very specific very specific information that we can give to them and help them with their conference marketing. And then obviously with regards to my consultancy, I'm looking for a very specific type of agency to work with. And if you go on agencytrailblazer.com, you'll be able to see what's going on in that world there.
Yeah, because finding what you are good at or what you love doing is not that easy. It's almost proportional to pricing, because both are like same animals you need to tame. Because
yeah,
I personally been doing, you know, work with agencies for last 4 or 5 years. Why? Because I love that, because I hate client communication, but I still work with direct clients, only those who I find good, deeper, profound connection.
Yeah. I would say just on that, because you will have had maybe bad experiences with certain clients, et cetera, don't allow that to make you think you don't love design or you don't love web builds anymore. Because I went through a phase where I thought I didn't love building websites anymore because I'd had a run of really bad clients. So it was negative experiences that I'd associated with the talent and the skill that I have. And yet if I build a website for myself where there's no one else involved, I am having a blast. So at that point, being able to focus on the type of client I wanted to attract allowed me to fall back in love with the art of web development again.
Yeah, because clients can really dig deep for you. Like, it's been there. Like, once you're there in the business for last, like, I think you are in there for last 10 years now, or maybe more.
I've been rocking the agency space for over 10 years now.
So you've had all kinds of clients under the sun. So all kinds of experiences.
I'd love to tell you some stories, but maybe not.
Okay, now let's focus on something very broad. How can one identify or measure own value that would be a guide for setting price range for your online services? Is there a methodology?
There are certain ones. I mean, again, you need to understand what who your target market is, et cetera, the problem that you're solving. So for example, if you're going to offer a service like care packages for websites, then and you're only just starting, you do need to understand what's involved for that particular target audience. So if you're going to be working with, say, lawyers, for example, and looking after their websites, they're probably going to need some extra care and attention that maybe other organizations can't offer for the price. So let's look at, say, WP Curve that GoDaddy bought. That was $99 a month for a care package. So we already understand that one of the big players offers $99 per month for a care package for my website. Now, clearly, that's not really sustainable for one person on their own to try and sell multiples of $99 and work on multiple websites. So now think of the target audience that you're looking at. Okay, so we're looking at lawyers, and security is one of their, you know, top most of their list. If their website's hacked, that looks terrible for them. So we're going to need to put in lots of extra care and attention and love for this particular type of client. So that's going to allow us to ignore that $99, start to understand how much work and effort is going to be involved in us in doing and servicing these websites. And then we can start to put a price on that. What you can then do is test those prices with different leads to see, you know, what gauge the reaction when people are saying, oh, that sounds a bit expensive, or yeah, great. Every time I get a yeah, great, that means I put the next price goes up to the next new lead, because I'm like, okay, maybe I've undervalued myself. And again, remember, it is okay to make profit. It's actually essential that you make profit as a business, because you need to be able to look after your clients, and you need to still be there in a year's time because they need you and your skill, etc. If it was going to be for a web build, then again, look at how much time you think at least it's going to take you. It's good to work out an hourly rate just to help you start to price things out. So for example, we worked out an hourly rate based on selling approximately 40% of our time per week. So if we could be selling billable hours at 40% of the available billable hours in any one week, we were working out how much we needed to turn over as a business to be a profitable business, and then divided by those hours, which came up with an approximate hourly rate. That therefore allowed me to then say, okay, to build one page of a website, I think it's going to take me approximately 8 hours plus 5 hours for that, 8 hours for that, blah, 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 blah. And it allows me to build up a chunk of a rough price guideline, not including anything else like functionality that we might need to do. So there are other ways to start to help you formulate some prices. And again, you can always look at the competition if you need to. If you are niching down, the beauty of that is you are at least reducing the number of competition that you have, which gives you a lot more flexibility on the prices. So I wouldn't go ahead and try and compete with WP Curve. If you were going to start a WP Curve style of service, then I would go ahead and compete in a very small pond for a very unique set of people at a high rate where you can give them exceptional value and be a rock star in that niche.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you this, like, where does prices of your competitors figure in when you price yourself? Like, do you price higher or lower? So I guess...
Well, it's interesting. Sorry to interrupt, because there are many services that are extremely cheaper compared to me. So if you go and look at our estimate generator on anglecrown.com/estimate and then price up how much converting your design to a theme with us, it's not cheap. You could go to PSD to WordPress, I think it is, or PSD to WP and maybe get it for $300 or $400. However, our difference for us is that we've elevated ourselves within the space. There's the personal brand. There is the tons of free information that we provide. We are proving that we know our stuff, and we're also offering a whole load of extra services included into that, you know, consultancy, our experiences, our help with pricing and all of the other stuff. So that really helps to add tons and tons and tons of value in our space. So even when there are other people who are charging a lot less, you can still elevate yourself. You can still give yourself way more credibility by showing up and putting yourself out there, and therefore allowing you to charge a higher rate. I think I may have answered a question that you've got coming up.
Yeah, because, you know, one important thing clients forget, that if a person or an agency is charging you higher, they are most likely to deliver you higher value in terms of quality. Like if you are doing a standard design to a WordPress build, the quality of code, the quality of attention, the level of detail that you will put in would be much higher than, you know, those charging 200 and 400. And majority of them are like automated systems. I've seen those horrible themes, and clients get it and then they pigeonhole themselves, and some things don't work because there are a few, you know, designed to WordPress automated stuff. They hire very cheap, you know, I wouldn't say cheap, but very economical kind of a, you know, workforce. And they will just do those things on bulk basis. So quality also, well, quality comes at a price, right?
Yeah, quality comes at a price. And you're totally right. If people are going to use a cheap service, they're not going to get all of the extra time and attention for it. People do expect to be looked after as the price goes up. They expect to have something that's going to be more future-proof, moldable, etc. If you're going to use a third-party tool or service, or maybe go for cheap, then you're probably not going to get that thought process about how is this going to be used in 1, 2, and 5 years from now. Because, you know, websites shouldn't be discardable. Hopefully, a website will be built and then evolved over time as you look at the data. So it's going to be a long-term relationship, and you're going to look after this client, provide them something that is future-proof. And that's always a good sell-in as well when you're having these sorts of conversations. Websites should not be like crazes.
Yeah, and another important thing in this, you know, high pricing, high value, you know, sphere is the ownership. Because when you are, you know, charging higher, you tend to take ownership of the project at a much higher scale than a person doing at a very economical level. For them, it's like, bring it on, it's done, get lost, you know, next one. Yep. That's next. The mentality there.
Pile them high, sell them cheap.
Okay, now you've discovered the value. You price yourself. How do you enhance your value? Like, where does free work or creating free online resources fit in enhancing your value and position yourself as an expert to, you know, get onto that path of commanding higher authority, higher pricing?
Absolutely. Well, you'll know that we've got the podcast, we do blogs, we have a YouTube channel, and I also show up on stage at events doing public speaking. All of that is stuff that we do for free, that we provide for free out there, because that allows us to continue with our mission. Our mission is to actually help as many agency owners as we can grow their agency and fall in love with their agency again. So if we can provide lots and lots of free information, that allows us to achieve that for many, many people, many of whom may never give us any money, and that's totally fine, because at least we're doing something great for the world. We're achieving part of our mission. However, what that also does is that absolutely elevates us, you know, amongst our competition. People know who Lee Jackson is. They know the content. I'm on this podcast right now. I've showed up with you, and I'm answering your questions with confidence based on experience, etc. So if a client or a potential client is watching this, that again elevates me. They know this guy knows what he's talking about. This guy is going to look after us. This guy is going to be able to cope with our questions. He's going to be able to solve our problem, etc. If you hide behind a computer and try and use Google Ads and Facebook Ads and clever typography to attract people in to purchase your product, it might actually be a lot harder to command a higher price, as opposed to when you actually show up and you become an influencer or a thought leader in your space.
Yeah, and disclaimer, Lee Jackson is not charging to be here on this podcast, so it's free.
Nope. This is free.
Okay, so providing free content, appearing on stage for events, appearing mm-hmm. on podcasts like this, what are other ways to enhance your visibility, authority in the online world?
Well, of course, showing up on podcasts like this. So not only doing your own stuff, but turning up for free on podcasts, but also going to industry events as well. So we will go to very many industry events, especially in the event sector. We will go to events about event planning, etc., and go and meet other people there, because that allows us to network. And we will make sure that we're providing as much value as we possibly can. So you can provide free value, not necessarily by creating downloads, but by being parts of communities and helping other people out, because they'll remember that. You've helped me out in the past. I've helped other people in our community out in the past. And then we get new introductions all the time of, oh, you need to meet Lee. He does WordPress development. And they say that to somebody because I've helped them out and we've had that relationship in the past, etc. So showing up where you can and providing free value doesn't necessarily just mean free content, but it also means building relationships and helping people, because that helps with your mission anyway. Whatever your mission is, ours, it's to help agency owners love their agency, grow their agency. So if I can go and help someone and give them some free advice and they I see them succeed in 6 months' time, I feel freaking amazing. But an offshoot of that might be reciprocal work at some point.
Okay, now communicating higher pricing, aka higher value, is very important. A lot of designers, developers fail at the very basic thing, right messaging, because we are not good communicators. Well, majority of developers and designers are not good communicators. Even clients would raise red flags about your higher pricing by comparing you with others in the market. How does one convey the higher pricing and value in a right way to have better conversions?
The best way to write your copy for your website is to actually talk to your ideal client and get them to write the copy for you. So you will ask them, what are your problems? And in their words, use their words to fill your page with the problems that they have communicated to you, and setting yourself up as the solution provider. You don't necessarily need to mention prices on your website straight away. The minute you are talking in their language to them about their problems in the way that they would normally talk, you've already elevated yourself amongst the local two agencies down the road who just do full service agency. But wait a minute, there's you over here and you're talking their language about their problems in their industry. You don't even need to talk about pricing. They already know you're going to be more expensive and they already want to spend more money with you because you are talking their language. So that is what I would recommend, first of all. To cut out some of the lower prices, what we've started to do recently over the last 6 months, we've been trialing the estimate generator on our website. Where people can go
it's
in
amazing.
And they can generate a quote, and it gets used every day. It's one of our most visited pages, and to be honest, hardly anyone then says, yeah, I want to go ahead and do the project with you. I think a lot of people are using it to price their own sites, and that's cool. But what it has done is it's absolutely dramatically reduced the hundreds and hundreds of inquiries we'd get where people only had a few hundred pounds to convert a design into WordPress. We can just send them straight off to one of these third-party services. And it's allowed us to just have people come in who actually have some sort of budget.
Yeah. And the funny part about that estimate generator, one agency had a, free PDF download, like how to get an awesome prices and awesome websites. That PDF was meant for clients, but majority of people who downloaded that PDF were like other agencies trying to figure out, hey, what is this lead magnet all about? So this kind of thing happens a lot. So besides, explicitly defining your pricing in terms of a estimate generator and writing copy that connects, does more of communication with client also help, like one-to-one video or in-person communication, is that more convincing as compared to audio or email conversation?
Well, we'll always make sure that we have some sort of audio conversation at some point. So all of our clients are all around the world. So very often we can't go and physically see them. And in most cases, we can't, even if they're in the UK, because it's not feasible or profitable to start traveling all around the UK to go and see people. So we'll always insist on web meetings where, like this on Zoom, we can see each other and we can have a conversation. We can share screens. We can collaborate on drawing boards, etc. If the client for us is in London, we'll often go down because we live a trip down to London and it's nice to go to their office and just hang out there, etc. But yeah, there needs to be voice communication. Again, I think a lot of us web developers, including myself, are secretly introverted. Despite the fact I'm showing up everywhere, I would love nothing more than to be sat at home with a beer, with the fire on in the middle of winter and the candles on, chilling out, you know, and hiding behind my laptop, because that sounds absolutely freaking beautiful. But it does help to have conversations, to pick up the phone. I still do this to this day. When a client's got a problem, I'll write an email and it'll take me 40 minutes to write the email. And then we'll all get in an argument and it'll take several days to sort it out. Whereas I could have just picked up the phone instead of avoiding it, to just continue that conversation. But definitely at the very beginning, having some sort of voice conversation to get things cracking. Most people who come in with a lead will get a button, get a link from us to arrange a call at a time that suits them. And then we'll get on the phone and start talking. And everything else maybe could be done via email. That's fine. But we would prefer getting you on the phone, especially at the very beginning.
And one other important thing is, like, when you give a big price tag to a client, telling what part of the project is costing what, like, instead of telling one big price, is it better to explicitly mention which component of the project is costing him what, like design, development, or maybe he asked for a special feature that you factored in the big price, but you are mentioning it separately?
Yeah, we actually break most things down into budgets and we don't provide you a fixed price. And what we'll do is we'll do some sort of discovery with you, depending on the size of the project. It may be a free discovery. More often than not, it's some sort of paid discovery. And we're going to come up with a detailed brief. You as the client don't actually understand how to give a right brief to an agency. So you're going to pay us and we're going to help you to actually create the brief that you need. From that brief, we can then set some rough budgets. So the design we think you're going to need £5,000 for the build we think you're going to need £10,000 for. Within the build, this part of functionality, which is integration into the API, that's probably going to be around the 2K mark, etc. So these are all estimates, and we're then going to suggest you add 30% onto the budget as well as contingency for things that haven't been thought of, etc. Also within the budget, we'll include maybe a line of discovery. So this is a more in-depth discovery where we'll actually create the product specification document. During that product specification document, that's when, I'm hitting my mic again, that's when you can very specifically nail down all of the prices and we can keep the client controlled. I know that sounds wrong, but scope creep is very, very easy. So, you know, it's very easy to creep in there. That's why it's called creep. And if you've spent some time at the beginning creating that product specification document with them, which says this is exactly how everything is going to work, if the client then says during that process, oh yeah, and then we want it to do this magical thing, then you'll go, fine, we can write that in, but we're going to have to increase that budget over there. Is that okay with you? And very often the client will go, oh yeah, good point there. We'll save that for a phase two. Or the client will say, no, this is essential. So yes, let's increase the budget. But it allows you to control all of that. So we'll never give you a fixed price. We will give you a budget range and we will help cement what that budget range is going to be during that process of development, of creating the product specification document, because that allows us all to nail it down and have some sort of fixed agreement.
Yeah, it's very important because a lot of people pigeonhole themselves by giving a fixed price and then clients, you know, revisit and say, oh, this is missing. Oh, I meant this, but you've done this. Yeah. So I actually want to.
Why can't I upload videos and why aren't they streaming? Yeah. Well, that's, we didn't agree that. Yeah, but I said I want to clone a Facebook.
Yeah. Well, you know, those days are gone, but you know, those are funny days. I want a Facebook like website. My budget is $1,000. You know, please build me one. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's very interesting. You know, a lot of people stumble on this point. Like they give a fixed estimate. Okay, you want a website. This is the price. And they don't figure out like what actually is going in the head of the client, because once you've done the first draft, the website looks beautiful. Hey, there's something missing here, right? You didn't add custom post types, right? So that's very good point. Now, pricing is difficult, not just for website, but also for other offerings like digital products and even memberships. Like you sell one, like a paid membership community at Agency Trailblazer. Mm-hmm. So how do you decide on pricing of those kind of things, like digital downloads or digital products or even a membership that you are running now?
Okay, so pricing, again, it's it is very difficult. So for something like Agency Trailblazer, I wanted to set the price low to allow people in to be able to start to take some sort of action. So it was just a small step in for people to come in and start to educate themselves. So I put a low price on that initially to encourage people in, and I've then put the prices up a couple of times in phases. To get the pricing, I compared myself with other people online that were providing membership sites, and I joined the membership guys to get a good understanding from other membership site owners what they were charging, how they were structuring their prices, and how they were structuring their systems as well. So the technology that they were using. So that was really helpful to be a part of that, to help me understand what sort of pricing to charge. Next year, our prices will be going up, and we'll also be putting out things like some tiered courses, which will be in much higher value. The reason for that would be is that the problems that they are solving are a high value problem. And we don't want to... if you don't charge enough for a particular course that will solve a high value problem, then the person who purchases that may never even do it. If it only costs them $49 to do this course that's going to make a significant change in their life, $49 absolutely devalues their problem to them. It essentially says to them, I don't value your problem enough, or maybe you don't value your problem enough either at $49. So, you know, again, it's a lot of it will be testing pricing. And again, it's absolutely okay to make profit as a business. That's why we are here. And we need to exist so that we can help, so that we can help people. Does that help answer the question?
And that $49 for that person who's purchased it is an expense, not an investment. If that $49 becomes $500, that would be an investment, and he will, you know, take out time, especially from his busy schedule, and work on what's been there and what's been taught in the course. So, and obviously take action, because if you're paying something, you would. That's a very good point, which people, you know, forget when pricing their digital products. When, you know, when I launched my Genesis themes, which was like 3-4 years back, my pricing was double the normal pricing of the Genesis at that time, which was like $40-$50, and my pricing started from $80 and it went up to $200. And some people are like, you are insane, why are you selling a Genesis theme for $199? And guess what, majority, almost 60% of sales that we got were for $199 plan. Like, I would have never imagined a person paying $199 for just one Genesis child theme, but they were paying it because my target audience was not like DIY people. They were like agencies who are going to use my theme for their clients, and they have money.
And also remember, for people listening as well, the great thing that you did there was, instead of competing with everybody else, you found your niche, you created something that solves their problem. And because you're able to sell at $199, you have to sell a lot less of those themes to have a profitable business. And you can then still look after those people really, really well and treat them like royalty, because you have a pricing plan and a business model that allows you to be successful in business, therefore allows you to look after the client that you're selling to, which is the responsibility of all of us. So if we're undercharging, then we're devaluing ourselves, and we're not being honorable to our clients either. That's my opinion. But yeah, so
and rocking it. There's an interesting observation in this also. Like, people who pay $199 are like agency people, and they don't even ask support questions. But a person who will buy it for $80 will ask like 10 different questions.
And the insane thing as well, if they've bought it for $199, they're probably reselling that investment that they made in you at least a minimum of £10,000 per website. And they're probably rocking many, many, many of those out every single year. So you're a superhero in their eyes, and that was a bargain for them.
Yeah. And people are still buying those themes at $199, even though they are just two themes. But even though Genesis market has sort of gone down, but all those new people who are coming into the ecosystem still, you know, love Genesis and they would look for those. They have not discovered the Beaver Elementor ecosystem yet. But I don't know, maybe Genesis will bounce back with Gutenberg and...
You never know.
You never know because WordPress Engine is definitely making a lot of good noise and putting resources behind StudioPress and Genesis. So let's see. But a hosting company behind a theme, they would obviously give themselves a preference. So there's always a tricky situation. So let's see. Because all those people who make third-party Genesis themes have gone quiet since the acquisition of Genesis. So let's see what happens there. Okay, now let's talk about hourly or fixed project pricing. Now, I don't do hourly for projects, but I do hourly once the project is over and do follow-up maintenance. What has been your experience in terms of hourly fixed pricing dilemma?
Okay, so likewise, we don't do hourly pricing necessarily. We do have an hourly rate. If there are some small amends that need to happen afterwards or we're needed for some ad hoc work here or there, then we will we'll provide a quote based on a few hours, etc. More often than not, though, we will try and encourage clients who are going to want to continue to do things to their websites beyond the go live, as we'll encourage them to invest in some sort of packaged either bundled hours or some sort of support package, which is going to include a certain amount of development and a certain amount of support, etc., over the course of a year. So we'll very often do that. But if there is something where somebody is very happy, because a lot of the times these are agencies, same as you, who are taking over the website, they don't necessarily need a support contract from us, but they do need some small tweaks now and again, then that's fine and we'll quote for a few hours of work if we need to. If we don't know how long something's going to take, then we'll put the burden of risk back on the agency and say, we think we will need 5 to 8 hours, but we cannot guarantee. So please approve up to 8 hours of our time and we will give you a report halfway through on whether we think we're going to breach that or not. Because if we think we're going to breach that and they think actually let's just it's not worth going any further, we'll charge them the 4 hours and we'll all walk away. Because sometimes things, we're all developers, we understand that sometimes things do take longer. You don't know why something's happening and maybe you need to add some code or change something or integrate with something. You think it'll take hours, perhaps it's going to take 2 days, you don't know. So if you are very sure, it's fine, quite a few hours for that, job done. But if there is a level of uncertainty, we always put that burden of risk back on the client because we're not an insurance company. So, you know, we need to make sure that we're covering our time and for the client. So the client will need to take on that risk. It's their investment.
Okay. So now just like you decide what clients pays you for the work, you also have to decide what you are going to pay your subcontractors and employees. So how do you decide on that part, like figuring out a percentage of a project estimate or something else?
So if we are getting other people involved who are contractors, then we will actually have the contractor quote us for the elements that they're going to need to work on. And we'll also understand what their hourly rate is as well for anything that's extra. So then their prices are built into the prices that we charge the client. We have a markup on theirs as well as anything else that we're going to do. If it's for employees, then obviously we just have our employees and they will be employed on a contract which the benefit will be relative to what other people in the industry are getting. And then we're looking to continue to maintain, get that loyalty. We've had people working with us for years now, so we want to really look after them and make them feel special.
And what's your agency mix like? Do you have employees, more employees, or do you just work with subcontractors?
No, so we've got, over the two businesses, we've got 6 employees, and then we do have quite a few subcontractors that we work with as well, especially in the realms of design and support, because obviously we all specialize predominantly in development. Design and support are the two that we would normally partner with other people on to help on specific projects. Sometimes you'll have a design agency who has also no design resource left, and they'll need us to source somebody who can join the project to maybe do some of the artworking. The brand may have been developed, but they're going to need someone to do the general artworking. And that, at that point, they'll lean on us.
And your employees are like remote or they are in office working here?
So in office working here in the Bedford office as well, and in Vellore in India as well.
Oh, cool. All over the world.
Yeah, 3 offices.
Okay, now let's talk about increasing your pricing. Now, increasing your price for a new project is very easy, but how do you handle increasing pricing for existing clients, those vintage clients wanting a new project or maybe new addition to a website that you've already built a few years back?
Okay. We will tell them if our hourly price has gone up. That's no problem. if they can't afford that, that's absolutely fine. We probably won't be able to service them, because if they were several years ago and suddenly they want work at the same rate that we were charging, our business has changed, our costs have increased, we're just not going to be able to service them, and we'll probably help them move on to someone else. However, because we lead with the problem and understanding what the problem is and the value of that problem and how much work needs to go into that, the client never feels like our prices have been increased, if that makes sense, because everything is relative. Of course, our hourly rate that we use internally to help us to build up some sort of price has had to go up because of our costs, etc. We need to make sure that we've at least sold this amount per month. That's our target, etc. And we've covered all of those. So yes, that may internally go up, but to the client, it never necessarily feels like the price has gone up. And we did have one client who had a reduced rate negotiated with us over 4 years ago. And we did have to approach them and say, look, we either can't work together or that price needs to go up. And what they've found is a hybrid to work with us. So they actually work with us on a higher rate now on specific projects, which means they're still profitable. We still get good money in from them. And for certain other projects, they outsource those to a different company that are able to charge a lower rate for some of the lower end stuff that they'll need some work on. So that means we still get the best of their work, and we still make a profit, and we still get to look after them. And they also get to, hedge their bets and look after their own bottom line as well by getting some of the stuff that they can get cheaper done elsewhere.
And do you follow a strict yearly cycle of raising prices, or do it when you feel like doing?
No, we look at the finances at the end of every single year and see what needs to change. What were our costs? What are our plans for the next 1, 2, or 3 years? Do we expect to be employing more staff? And also, what type of services are we going to continue to offer? Because it's a good idea to keep looking at your services and saying, all right, well, was that even profitable? Do we even want to be doing that anymore? Do I really want to be building a brand new plugin for a client that's going to take me so many months, etc., and only pulls back this much profit? Perhaps not. Perhaps we need to go for that product or service. So we've only had to raise our prices, our hourly rate, twice. The massive increase that we originally did was we quadrupled and then quadrupled again our original prices that I was charging years ago. And I say our, I mean me at the back of my house on my own, trying to build websites at £150. So that was the only time where I had a client, I charged them £150. And then I said, I'm an idiot, I can't charge you that anymore. I can't work with you anymore unless you can afford like £2,000. And obviously no one renewed, which was fine. But I then went and found £2,000 paying clients and moved onwards and upwards from there.
That sounds cool, because you need to get out of that cycle of, you know, $100, yep, $200. And the earlier you get out, the better it is for you, for your brain, and even for your skill set and your interest. Absolutely. In doing the
and your family. Thing. Your family. I was working 19-hour exactly. days. I was exhausted. I was putting out great work at first, and then even that started to plummet as well, because I was absolutely exhausted and it's just unachievable. So right back to your original question, pricing from the beginning is essential.
Yeah, because I always give this analogy. I don't know where I heard this. Like, in the beginning, you are in the have phase, that I have to do this, I have to do this. But you need to get out of from have to want phase. Like, I want to do this, I want to do this. Because once you get from have to want, not just you will find it more enjoyable, you will actually perform better at what you're doing and obviously command higher pricing. So
exactly.
Let's talk about your toolbox. So what are your current 5 favorite tools that power your online business?
I literally did a podcast all about this.
Yeah, I just saw the episode. I think you mentioned, I think David Wong Grace shared your post somewhere.
Well, I'll go through it then. So from memory, our toolbox for 2019 does include Gutenberg, of all things. Because on the 27th of November, apparently, 5.0 is coming out. So we got to embrace it whether we like it or not. So we've already been embracing it, and we're going to continue to embrace it because that's the direction WordPress is going, and WordPress is our bread and butter. That is
but I
how
guess
we
you use
live and
Google
breathe.
Builder on most builds, so it won't matter a lot, to be honest.
Not all the time, but I also don't like using Beaver Builder for blog posts because clients get crazy and they create some really bad looking stuff. With Gutenberg, you can actually lock down templates. We're interested in using a combination of ACF, which is the next plugin I would recommend that we use as well, so as Advanced Custom Fields. And we can create Guten blocks, as it were, with Gutenberg. And we can also then lock down specific templates. So we can actually provide a much more attractive interface for our clients to fill in all of their custom meta that will then output on the post. We still have control of the HTML and CSS, etc. So Gutenberg has quite a few advantages that
Beaver,
I can see.
And Beaver Themer fits in somewhere, or you're not going to use
it? Beaver Themer. Oh, totally. So we will then continue to use Beaver Builder and Beaver Themer. So especially for, so I would be using the interface of Gutenberg for things where you are filling in data, and then that's going to be output in a very specific way. We would then use Beaver Themer to actually output the data if we wanted to, or we'd do custom PHP, CSS, whatever this type of project is. Beaver Builder itself would obviously be for your landing pages and for the sorts of pages where we want to give clients the free rein. The way we use Beaver Builder is that we actually disable most of the inbuilt add-ons, and we create all of our own custom modules, because it's really important that if you build a website for a client that they keep that website on brand. So if you give them the ability to do everything and the kitchen sink, I guarantee they will butcher your website and their own, as it were. You will never be proud to show the website to anybody, and the client will not get the value that they need to from the website. So we create custom modules that are all designed.
And you do that. And you do that lockdown of Beaver Builder thing by custom code, or you use something like Wallace Inline? Because Wallace Inline Editor lets you do that also. So
we create custom code. So we create our own modules that have everything layered inside. So you can just drag and drop it in, and it will look as it's meant to, as per brand. Obviously, Beaver Themer will allow us to integrate and do layouts and integrate with ACF as well. We do use Elementor. That, though, is for our own sites predominantly. Although Moore Cohen has showed me some amazing plugins which really have blown my mind recently about Elementor. But right now, Elementor is something that we would use as an internal for our own landing pages, our own websites. It gives us much greater control, much greater design than Beaver Builder does. However, we think it's too complicated for our clients to use, which is why we like Beaver Builder, because it's got that customizability. You can white label it, you can restrict all sorts. There's really good development documentation for us, etc. It's not bloated, none of that. So it allows us to provide a really good user experience and also keep some sort of control of the website so things don't get out of hand. And then obviously, finally, we've got the Page Builder framework from David von Gries, and that really allows us to use either Visual Builder, but still use a theme which has, again, good documentation, hooks, all that sort of thing that we need to be able to use. So we can use that theme with either platform, and we know where everything is. We know where all the settings are, et cetera. So that's really good for us as well. So that's kind of this coming year there, the main WordPress tools, our toolkit, I guess, or our development stack that we would be utilizing.
So all your website development uses Page Builder framework theme, right?
Not all of it. For 2019, this is where we're pushing into 2019. So we've been doing a lot of testing with the Page Builder framework, and we're doing a couple of internal projects with it, and we're going to start rolling it out for clients as well. And we've actually used our own framework in the past, but the work David's doing is phenomenal, especially with all the changes that are happening with WordPress. I think it's kind of good if you can use a third party who are continuing to invest in the development of that. It's a combination of theme and plugin, because we're actually using their pro version.
Yeah, and you mentioned about Elementor and it's all the jazzy features it has. Guess what? Beaver is also getting those in 2.2 version. So,
is it?
Yes, and they are stepping up the game, really, you know.
Well, they kind of need to, because like Elementor is amazing. I'm not even kidding you, but I love Beaver Builder. I will never stop.
Well, all the features are already there in the beta version. It's already there. It's already out. So you can control all the typography. You can add super fancy gradient overlays over anything. Like, they've gone one step ahead in terms of gradients. So you got to try it once.
I'm going to go and install the beta right after this call.
Okay, so what is your recommended web hosting service?
I would recommend, I guess it's a UK host, it would be Guru.
Okay.
It's guru.co.uk. They are very fast, great support. They have Lightspeed Cash all included and very responsive. The other host I would recommend, which people will probably tut at me, would simply be WP Engine, simply because they've looked after us again in the past.
I love WP
Staging,
to be honest. Yeah. Most of
well, some people don't. People have a go at me about it. So I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but I quite enjoy using them. You know, their support is pretty good. Sometimes we've had a few bad experiences, but I think that we've had the same with anyone. You know, there are going to be the odd bad experience, but the backups are great. Same with Guru, same with WP Engine. The support's great, same with both. You've got the ability to do staging environments, all of that good stuff. So I would definitely recommend having a look at either one of those two.
I love WP Engine. Most of the agencies that I work with, they actually use WP Engine itself because it gives them all kinds of control. They take care of your website in on a more final level. The only criticism that you get for WP Engine is like, it's expensive, you know? Obviously, there's a school of thought, like you're paying $35 for one website. Hey, you can spin up two servers on Cloudways for that. But then do you want to spend your time managing those things? I don't. And most of the agencies don't. And they can definitely pay that $35, you know, value by charging, because they charge high prices to their clients. They can easily absorb those prices. So
great case study for this podcast, all about pricing.
Yeah. And so the next question, I know you've already answered it, but I'm still going to ask you, which is your recommended page builder, Beaver, Elementor, or maybe Oxygen, Drizzy, maybe Divi, you know?
Visual Composer. I'm joking. Beaver Builder.
But on a serious note, I've seen Visual Composer, the new version. It's just like they've changed clothes. So they've gone, even they're stepping up the competition. So Beaver Builder is for you, right? And you also use Elementor.
Beaver Builder is for me. Elementor is definitely like my mistress on the side, as it were. But Beaver Builder is my first love. And Visual Composer, I have a lot of negative history. So even if they've changed their clothes, it's an uphill slog for them if they're going to make a difference, I think.
Yeah, even I'm not going to give them second look, to be honest.
No way. Not even interested. I've had too many horror stories.
So what is your recommended email marketing service?
Keep it simple. MailChimp is fine.
Yeah, even I love that monkey, to be honest.
Yep, it's fine. It does the job for me right now. I do use a couple of other services in the other businesses for some of the automation and some of the tracking, etc. But just for general, keeping in touch with people, it's just MailChimp's just easy.
Yeah, I use MailChimp, but when I talk to certain experts, gurus, hey, you're using MailChimp, you need to switch to ConvertKit. So I might even try ConvertKit. So let's see. I don't know.
Yeah, ConvertKit's okay as well. But if you don't want to spend loads of time, you just need to be sending some emails out and that's all it's serving for a basic purpose, then MailChimp will do you. If you need automation, if you need workflow rules, all of the other stuff, ConvertKit or ActiveCampaign are the two other platforms that we use, which are both phenomenal.
Yeah, that's where I'm going in 2019, you know, segmenting funnels. It's easier said than done, but it's an interesting thing, you know, how you see, oh, so many people open my email. That's cool. So, okay, any upcoming tool or service that has caught your attention?
Yes. Dubsado. That's Dubsado.
That's project management tool?
I guess it's not necessarily project management. It's essentially a CRM for creative businesses. So it could be for photographers. It could be a wedding photographer who's using it. It can be creative agencies, design agencies, development agencies. It essentially allows you to manage your leads. And you can then convert those leads, send proposals, send invoices, etc., convert them into actual jobs. You can take payment. You can track your payment. You can reconcile your payment against, you know, to say, yes, I've received this payment against the bank and all of that sort of stuff. So it's kind of a combination of CRM, a bit of project management, although we would use Asana for that anyway, and just integrate the two. And it also allows you to do your invoicing and see a financial picture of what's going on. It also integrates with QuickBooks, which is what we use anyway, which is fine. So that just means everything is connected. And I always then have a handle. What's really important in agency life is when you win a project, just don't all go hands on deck and build the project, because there is a whole load of time ahead of you where you may not have sold anything. So at least with something like a CRM system like Dubsado, or maybe go ahead and use the free one from Zoho CRM, which is a little bit more complicated, but at least have a track of all the potential leads that you have and keep in touch with those people, keep servicing those leads so that eventually you can convert some and start to fill your pipeline in the future.
I think I remember you mentioned Zoho One, like you were using that as well?
Yeah, we did. We had a nightmare with it. It's absolutely, so on paper, Zoho One, phenomenal, low cost, get all of these amazing applications, etc., which was great. Our experience, though, was far less than great. We really tried like for 6 months keeping pushing on with it, but we very often found that there would be service interruptions. So with Gmail, our email essentially has gone down once, I think, in many years. I can't even remember when it went down. And yet I could count 5 different times where I was no longer receiving emails on Zoho. So that's already a problem. But then we would all also have issues where we would be either in the CRM or in the project management tool. And we would get this notification saying that it had momentarily lost connection. So a record that we had, we couldn't save. And also all of the applications, it felt like, had all been developed differently, as it were, or at different times. And then they've only kind of shoehorned in some sort of integration into them all. So there was lots of repeated data and it was really complicated to integrate things and confusing, and obvious features I thought should be there weren't there. And it just became this big mess of, let's just go back. And we went creeping back to a Gmail, a Google Suite, Asana, Dubsado, and the works.
Okay. Any last message for a person who's not sure about pricing besides listening to this podcast episode?
One piece of advice I would always be is, it would always be with pricing. If you don't get anything, at least with whatever price you've just come up with for a quote, double it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that. And guess what?
If you got nothing else, just double whatever you just thought of for your next client and see what happens. And you will get... You will start to develop the skills over time then.
Because
in my opinion,
like I network with a lot of people and some people would like message me, you know, I got this project. How much should I charge for it? Even I get lost on it because when someone is messaging on, you know, Facebook, you actually don't know what the project is all about. Just saying I have 5-page website does not make much sense because you don't know what's happening on those 5 pages. So it's pricing is complicated, but if you keep increasing it, it will be less complicated, I guess.
Yeah. And also remember on a 5-page website that one of the pages might actually be a portfolio of work. So it could be an architect and they think it's one page, but a portfolio actually needs a custom post type and you've got all of the projects and you've got galleries and you've actually got the single post pages as well. And don't forget, they'll also probably have a blog and all of the other stuff. There's a heck of a lot of work involved in a quote 5-page website. So you need to be talking about the brief and getting everything down that needs to be delivered before you even start to talk about pricing.
Exactly. Okay, Lee, it was amazing talking to you. Thank you for your time.
And you, loved it.
Have a good day.
And you. Cheerio.
You can join the free web creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.